afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, October 27th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
TGIF. And a lot of things happening out there. We were going to talk a little bit about the, what do you think about not releasing all of the Kennedy papers?
I didn't hear about that until just now you telling me. On one hand, I can't say, you know, it is wrong. It's just flat out wrong. We've talked about it before. I mean, somebody murdered the President of the United States.
They did release some.
Yeah, I know. I don't care. They should have released it all back then.
Oh, I agree.
It should not be diddling around, oh, we'll let a little more out, because we have to protect the Kennedy family. I don't care whether the Kennedy camp family is protected. Somebody murdered the President of the United States, and we are entitled to know what the investigation reveals. It's crazy that they conceal it, and they continue to do so. I mean, even Trump should be ashamed of himself for not turning it all loose.
You know what? I'm surprised. I'm truly surprised they've had 54 years and they couldn't clean it up. I mean, if they didn't want certain things released, there isn't anyone. I mean, hey, they didn't have computers. So a lot of it is just paper. Although I did read there was over 5 million papers or something like that. I mean, a tremendous amount in all this investigation.
Yeah, I know. The
so
haystack to bury the real evidence.
But it takes 54 years, you know, but anyway.
No, it's not just that it takes 54 years. They want everybody that was involved and everybody who could be implicated to be dead and gone, and they probably are. Right? How many people who were old enough to play a role in whatever happened to Kennedy, how many of those people are likely to still be alive today, 54 years later? Not many, if any at all. Right? But it's still probably, I mean, all you can presume is they are protecting some individuals and or some agencies and or some special interests who are implicated in this, and they are special interests that are still here now. The people may be gone, but the special interests are still here in the form of corporations or government agencies, and they don't want the embarrassment of being shown to be participating in the assassination of a president. At least, and I don't even know that that's true, but that is the logical inference. 54 years they've been concealing evidence.
Why? It was the Russians.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was the Russians. Trump and the Russians were working together back 54 years ago. How old was Trump then? 6-10 years old, something like that?
Well, you know what I was interested in, though? Here's my little conspiracy theory. I said it this morning on this morning program, and it's a silly little conspiracy theory, but it's still all mine. But, you know, during Trump's campaign, I mean, if we're looking up, if we're truly going down the road that they're trying to cover up for someone, if you look at Trump's campaign, he brought up Ted Cruz's father that was involved in with Oswald, I believe. And I believe in the papers that they did release there, or maybe it was previously, that they did they were talking about a businessman that I guess Ruby met with. And I'm thinking, well, maybe what Trump was saying, and maybe what the national everybody poo-poos it and laughs and stuff like that, and so did I. But maybe the National Enquirer was right. Maybe there was a connection, maybe not to the exact assassination, but perhaps an association. And you know, maybe you know, Mr. Trump wants to protect Cruz, Ted Cruz, in order to, you know, this tax cut's a big deal. And
no one
six
is
months,
entitled to protection in this.
And
map.
six. Well, I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying. And 6 months, I'm sure that they believe that these tax approvals are through, and maybe they don't want to, you know, disgrace Ted Cruz anyway. But you know, I just thought, well, isn't that interesting that there was a businessman that has no name.
Yeah, there was allegedly in this scandal with Hillary Clinton and the funding of this dossier that implicated Trump falsely and a hoax and rest that sort of thing. They are alleging there was one Republican politician that was involved. And Trump says, I think I can name him, but he doesn't know for sure, apparently, or at least he's not willing to name him. But who do you suppose it might be? I bet it's John McCain. I don't know that that's true, but he's the, you know, he is the arch anti-Republican in the Republican stable.
Oh, no, I believe that was the Bushes. The ones that were involved in that was the Bushes, because, I mean, you look at the Father Bush and his connections to the CIA and President, you know, his son. No, I'm talking about,
we're mixing apples and oranges here, because I'm talking about the current Russian dossier.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, too.
Well, I don't think Goldman Bush, either one of them, were still in a position of authority. They may have played a role in their relationship.
No, I would believe it would be the Bushes, because they're the ones that really do have the power, and the power to keep it secret too. I don't think it was McCain. I think it was the Bushes. Jeb, his father.
I don't know who it was.
I mean, his father with his connections to the. I mean, you know, these are long life blood. Yeah, you know, associates, and very powerful impact, and I would think that they would be about the only family that could, being in the Republican arena, would have the ability to truly keep that secret, and, you know, so that's who I would think it would be. And Trump, and you know what, if Trump thought it was McCain, I think he'd come out and say McCain.
Well, I don't doubt that whoever he thinks it is, he will come out before this is all over.
And
I don't think Trump can keep a secret. I think Trump, one way or another, as long as there's a Twitter computer anywhere close to him, I think Trump is going to tell everything he knows sooner or later. Maybe not intentionally, but I think he's going to do it.
I don't know. I mean, Kissinger was around, you know, and so, no, but, I mean, you know.
I don't think Kissinger was, I don't think he played a role in this Russian dossier thing. And I don't doubt that the Bush, he may have played a role in the Kennedy
Trump,
assassination. That conspiracy theory has been around for a long time.
I mean, Kissinger's been to the White House, what, 4 or 5 times, you know, and so, no, there is a. You know, this is advice. You know, I guarantee there's a lot of advice that comes from Kissinger.
Well, I've been to the White House, Melanie.
You know, so.
Not actually in it or on the grounds, but I drove by a couple times when I was in Washington a few years ago. Yeah. See, I'm connected. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, hell, he drove by the White House a couple of times.
No, but when you're talking about the truly deep state and the elite, now that'd be the Bushes all the way. But let's go ahead and see what they did to gold today. Actually, gold had a little bit of a turnaround today. We're still struggling at 1272, but it's up 560 on the day. Silver was up 4 cents today, still below 17 at $16.91. Platinum was down 3 at 917. Palladium was down 1 at 969. The USDX today continues to climb, up 0.24 at 94.88. Crude oil was up, another big day for crude oil, 1.30 at 53.94. And the paper markets today, geez Louise. The stock market today, the Dow was up 33 points at 23,434. You have the NASDAQ up 144 points, a big day, not 3%, but almost 2.25% for 6701. That's all that tech stock. And I saw where Jeff Bezos of Amazon is now the richest man in the world at $90 billion. I mean, that really is incredible. I don't think people really understand how much $1 billion
is. No, I understand. Do you think Bezos even understands? And what can he do with it?
I was reading that if you spent $5,000 every day, it would take 500 years to just spend $1 billion. Or, you know, I mean, it's just something. You know. What do you do with it?
I understand.
Oh, I know.
It's beyond any man's. I mean, what can you do with it? I mean, really, this is where you run into people like the guy at Tesla and his theories about putting people on Mars. Right? Well, they might have the money to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just extraordinary, but do you think it's right for one man or any one institution to have that much money? Yeah. Is it right? Is it dangerous? Can we just sit back and say, well, it's land of the free and we should be able to do that, and if I earn $100 billion, I should be in time. There is a certain amount of danger. You get into situations, you see some of these people, I mean, they really do. George Soros, absolutely classic example. He thinks he can meddle in the affairs of the whole world. Should any one man have that much power?
You have to remember, too, that a lot of these guys get their power and their money through subsidies, through taxes, you know, they don't. So, you know, when people talk to me about estate taxes and so forth, well, you know, they didn't have to pay us. You know, you can argue both sides. You really can argue both sides. And that is part of why some of these death taxes and so forth, you know, for people, for couples, for over $11 million, you know, maybe they should. But you know what, Al? If our Constitution was as strong and we had a government that's supposed to be, they wouldn't be allowed to influence.
Well, like I've said, it's that political campaign contribution laws need a huge restructuring because they're allowing people to bribe. Supreme Court has passed laws, they say political campaign contributions are a form of free speech, and essentially there are little restrictions on them. It can't be that way. You can't do this. And the same thing, you know, I am all in favor. Look, if you earn $1 billion,
yeah,
$100 billion,
I do too.
You should be able to do it. Here's the problem with it.
You give the money to your kids.
You give your money to the kids and you establish an oligarchy. You establish a family fortune that will go on for decades and no telling how long it'll go and no telling how unreasonable it will become. But that money will be managed by people who didn't earn it. I don't think you should be able to give more than $500,000 to your kids. Right? After that, you kids, you have to earn your own fortune in this world. You can't just sit back and say, well, I was born rich, and therefore I get to lord it over everybody else. If we're going to have a free market, that means everyone has to compete on a fairly level playing field, and it means you got to earn your own money. And if you can only earn $30,000 a year, I don't care if your daddy was spectacularly rich. You're going to have to learn how to make it on $30,000 a year. And the same should be true for everybody. What you make in your lifetime, fine. What you make, but it's dangerous to give that money to your children in the sense that it creates an oligarchy. And we're working with it to some degree right now. We have families that think they should rule the world. Because why? Because their great-grandfather made a bunch of money. And the rest of them, all they've done is use the money to manipulate and maintain power and control, but they haven't really earned it in the free market. All they've done is preserve what grandpa left them,
and
there's something wrong with that.
I mean, how do you stay mentally, when you have that amount of money, how do you stay mentally balanced? How do you stay, you know, we have no idea what it's like to have $1 billion or more, nevertheless, $90 billion. I mean,
I had a friend in Chicago years ago whose father started something called Science Research Associates, SRA, right after World War II, and eventually sold the corporation to IBM. All right? And part of the condition of sale is that they made him chairman of the board of IBM. Understand that? I mean, it's not just say, well, you want to buy my stuff. No, you don't just get to give me money. You got to give me control of IBM before I'll sell you SRA. Well, when he died, and he did at relatively early age, I think it was something like 55. I never met the man himself, but I knew one of his sons. He died, left $80 million after inheritance taxes, and this was back about 1960. All right? $80 million, that's when, and then the family moved all the money to Switzerland and turned it into Swiss francs. That was when gold was 35 bucks an ounce, right? And they turned all that essentially into gold. It was a fortune, a spectacular fortune. It wasn't, I've worked on homes when I was a kid. I grew up in an excavation business. We worked on homes for millionaires, and I saw early on, you know, the only difference between the home of the millionaire and the home, my home, was the millionaire's home was bigger. Right, but it was made with the same drywall and the same stick and, you know, same construction, the rest of that sort of thing. It was just bigger. That's all it was, wasn't it? But the friend I'm talking about, he and his family had a two-story condominium across the hall from Marshall Fields Jr. on the Gold Coast in Chicago. Big money, real spectacular money. Well, he knew he was kidnap bait. He didn't want people to even know he had any money to speak of. One of his brothers died. They were all trying to. The old man left the money in trust, and their big objective, and all the kids, their objective was try to break the trust so they could get their hands on the money. And the old man's trust, they never did break through it, at least not while they were relatively young. I haven't talked to him in 40 years, probably, something like that. But it was interesting to see. It wasn't just a free ride. One of his brothers died, was found dead in a bed with a gun, laying there in the bed, and it might have been suicide, and it might have been murder. He'd been making porno movies in order to get more money. It was a day. You get that kind of money for your kids, and it makes a strange world for them. They walk with a certain amount of. They can be picked up at any time by somebody who wants to kidnap them. It creates a very strange liability. Not an easy thing. Nobody'd turn it down. You know, I mean, who would turn it down? The opportunity to inherit tens of millions of dollars then, and this is back 60 years ago or more. Again, it was a huge, enormous fortune. And if it stayed in Swiss francs all that time and it stayed backed by gold, I don't know. It might be their billionaire. I don't know if that's true or false, but all I'm saying is it's not as easy being the heirs of rich people as a lot of us suppose it to be. Everybody'd like to try it. Everybody wishes their own children could be it, like to leave all my money to the kids because who else and blah, blah.
Well,
but
also
there's certain dangers involved. It's not just...
Also, what's they set up these foundations. We've seen more of these foundations being created. Soros, all his money's going into a foundation. And these foundations really do change the way people think and how they're trained. People are groomed through these foundations, just like we've had the Rhodes and you know, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. They all have these, you know, these various schools, like the Wharton schools, Harvard, and, you know, they train, they continue the thinking, and they groom them to follow their, you know, their ideas and their
beliefs. Not just to follow their ideas, but to preserve their fortune. I mean, people who are inheriting that big money, their fundamental business is to hire people to protect their fortune from the government, from the public, from whoever.
I think their ideas are more important because they are...
Well, it's part and parcel of the same thing, but it's all about the money. Let's take a break for a couple commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Caddis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Silver coin needs.
I just wanted to finish up on Bezos. Amazon now employs more than 500,000 workers. Amazon revealed yesterday that it had 541,900 employees in the third quarter, and that's up from a little more than 300,000 in the same period from last year. So they have added nearly 250,000 employees to its headcount in a single year. Now, part of that comes from it acquiring Whole Foods. And I think Whole Foods had about 85, 87, 90,000 employees. So, you know, that took some of the glut. And so they fulfill a lot of jobs.
Do you think that's all... You know, I have a suspicious mind, all right?
Not as much as mine.
Be a little bit off base here, but I'll bet I'm not entirely off base. They're bragging about how many employees they have. How many robots do they have? And I know they're using robots to satisfy orders in their warehouses and the rest of that. And my point is, are they saying, look, we're making jobs, we're creating jobs for all the people? But they're not going to talk about how many robots we've got. We're going to talk about how many jobs we've got, and I don't know how they calculated that. Half a million people working for... Did you say it was over 500,000 people?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes,
real surprising. That's surprising to me. I mean, it really is a spectacular number. 500,000 people working for one corporation? You know, I wonder if they're not counting some of the people in corporations that they've purchased and their manufacturing products that are being sold on Amazon and whatever, I don't know. But 500,000 people,
yeah.
Whatever it is, to me, I am suspicious that part of the reason for the report is to assure people that they have more people than robots working for them, and that may be true. But I don't know how long it's going to be true.
Well, speaking of robots, Walmart, they announced that you're going to see more and more robots coming to Walmart. For the past 3 years, the company has been testing shelf scanning robots in some of their stores in Arkansas, Pennsylvania, California. The machines, they move up and down the aisles. They look for out-of-stock items and products that are mislabeled or incorrectly priced. Then they flag these issues to the store workers. On Thursday, yesterday, said it's going to expand the test to 50 stores. The bots are set to arrive in places like El Paso, Jacksonville, and Fort Worth by the end of January. And the company has been careful to pitch the robots as machinery. I mean, are people going to fall for this, Al?
Sure.
They pitch them as machinery to help staffers, not replace them.
And now,
that's
you're not
exactly
going to be
what
replaced.
You were talking about. That's exactly what you were talking about on Amazon. Yep. You know, they're just not talking about how many of the robots are actually replacing the workers.
It's again interesting times. I don't know that anyone can resist this tide, and I'm sure that they have recognized that it is, you know, it's politically incorrect to say, "Oh, we're gonna use a bunch of robots to replace the people. We're gonna be giving you lower prices and better service with the robots." It's just we won't have any people actually working the store. Which one of the grocery stores was it? Was that Amazon that opened up a store, or was that Google? That opened up a grocery store.
No, Amazon bought Whole Foods.
No, I know that. But back about a year ago, they opened up one, maybe two stores, and I think it was maybe Google, that they know there are virtually no employees inside the store. You go in, you pick up your groceries, whatever you want. When you walk out, you don't even have to stop at the checkout counter. All right, you just walk out the door, and they will automatically sense how much product is in the basket
that
you're wheeling out, pushing out your car, load it into your car, take off. It's deducted automatically from your MasterCard or Visa. I mean, grocery store, whole grocery store, virtually no employees. And if they can do it there, they can do it any place. Then what?
Walmart,
it's the sort of thing but how do you resist the pressure? Because the robots really are less expensive to operate than you and I. And they are more accurate than we are. And they don't get tired. They do break down once in a while, but so do people. We get sick. We can't show up for work. The robots will have something similar. Once in a while, they break down. Somebody's got to fix them. They really are a more efficient way of doing business. And if you want to stay in business, you're going to be forced to hire robots. If your competitors are using them, you're going to have to use them too. This is something that can't be resisted.
Yeah, until they figure out, until they come up and say, well, you know what, that robot isn't buying my sweaters that we produced and put on sale last week, and the companies that produce the flu shots, well, we don't have to give flu shots to robots, so we're losing this amount of money. We better start hiring people again.
I saw an article just today. I didn't clip it for today's program, but I saw it 2 hours ago. Saudi Arabia has just granted citizenship to a robot.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia.
Well, you know, Al, that's in part and parcel to their announcement of that new city that they're building, that they're going to put in, what, $500 billion to build this city, and only the elite will be allowed in there. And they're planning on having that automated with the robots, and I think that was part of there is a connection between the two. So,
I would be surprised. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I mean, what are they trying to do? They're trying to avoid the great unwashed, because the great unwashed wants a bigger cut of the pie. And the super rich are saying, no, we get to have the whole pie, and the rest of you peons, you can live someplace else. We'll have our own cities with robot police and robot deliverymen and robot whatever, and we won't have to worry about the loyalty of our employees. I would bet that's a big concern with Saudi Arabia. I'll bet they are very much concerned with the loyalty of the people that are working for them. They had people from Yemen who provided most of their military, if I understand correctly, up until they started to have a problem with Yemen, and then they had a kind of a war going on between Saudi Arabia and Yemen, and it necessarily means they can't count on the loyalty of most of their military. So they want some sort of a city where they can live and enjoy their wealth and not be hassled by all the peons that they've robbed.
You know, it does kind of make you know, I used to buy more things on Amazon. I don't even go there anymore. It's just like, he doesn't need my money. You know, I'll go to the local store and I do
You'll
a lot more.
You'll get it one way or another, Melody.
They need
your money, Melody. They need yours and mine and even the money that poor people have. If there's a dollar out there and they don't have it, they want it, Melody. They got to have that dollar.
Perhaps. But there's just one more thing I wanted to say with Walmart, that they're also experimenting with some new technology in the delivery area. Last week, Walmart had announced that it was testing a straight-to-your-fridge delivery service where customers can monitor via their phones using in-house cameras. And we talked about that last week, where Amazon was also doing it, where you leave your door open or they have a special code that these delivery people could have access to your home while you're not there.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Are you kidding me?
I want to give access to my house to a cadre of delivery people. You can just walk right in. We'll trust you and the rest of that sort of thing. And don't just promise you won't say anything to your friends or neighbors that here's the code to get into my house, you know, the Addis House.
So, I mean, are we becoming so trusting to, oh, well, Walmart wouldn't have anybody.
No. They wouldn't tell any of their They wouldn't tell any of their friends or family or anything else. You know, you can have Bob coming by and going into your house. You can trust Bob. But what about his brother John, who just got out of the slammer for 3 years for burglary?
And here's something
else.
Trust
him not to break into your house if he can get the code out of his brother Bob.
This report came out a couple days ago, but it's worth noting too. And, you know, more store closings have been announced in 2017 than any other year on record. Since January 1, retailers have announced plans to shutter more than 6,700 stores in the United States. Now, when does that employment begin to show up in the employment numbers? I mean, that's a lot of stores, 6,700 stores in the United States. That beats the previous all-time high of 6,163 store closing, which hit in 2008. Okay, so
right about the beginning of the financial the financial problem, the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm. Walgreens have helped vault this year's tally to a new high when it said Wednesday that it plans to close about 600 stores, but it's still right there, right there at the same as 2008, even with, you know, without Walgreens. So, you know, some of the chains that have announced these closings, Kmart, Sears, we know most of them, JCPenney, Ann Taylor, Gap, Banana Republic, Michael Kors, Limited Staples. I mean, there's a bunch of them. And so it is kind of interesting.
It's more than interesting.
This is just up to, by and large, analysts expect this year's final total as many as 8,600 brick-and-mortar stores are expected to close this year.
Well, this is a hallmark for a depression. I don't care how you do that. We're not replacing 6,700 stores.
And employees.
We're not. This isn't going to be workout where, well, we're still selling the same amount of stuff over the Internet. One of the problems with the Internet is that it is inherently deflationary. And it may be part of the reason why the Federal Reserve says they claim, right or wrong, truthfully or dishonestly, they claim that they can't generate the degree of inflation that they want to generate. Maybe they really can and they're lying. Maybe they can't. I don't know. But the Internet itself is inherently deflationary because it is so extraordinarily competitive. And it means that necessarily prices are being pushed down and down and down. You can shop. You can have programs. They'll pick up the cheapest product you want. All right, they'll look for it. They'll find it. What's the cheapest? I'm looking for a particular product. Show me the store where it's the cheapest. Here it is. Bang, right now. I got it. Don't have to get in the car. Don't have to go. I can shop on the Internet, and I shop for the lowest price. And as I do, I'm shopping for products that have less and less profit. All right? And inevitably, the Internet is going to cut profits back to where there's not enough money to pay much to the help, what help there is. There's not much money to be paid into taxes into the government, and there's not going to be much money for welfare. There's not going to be much money for subsidies, or there will at least be less than there has been. What are they going to do about this? I mean, the Internet itself, it pushes us toward depression. It pushes us toward deflation because it makes things cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, right? And the competition is just, it's vicious. So, survival of the fittest, Melody. That's where it goes.
Well, these are a lot of retail job losses that certainly have not been filtered through on the scheme of things. So, you know, the day of coming is when they're going to have to take notice and say, hey, you know, gee, these numbers are beginning to tick up. And it truly is amazing that they've been able to hide it to this degree. So, lie about it.
Yeah, and it's not even a question, again, from my perspective, it's not simply a question of hiding the numbers. It's hiding the fact that this is a competitive wave that cannot be resisted. We talked about this on the program before. China had planned, I saw plans most of a year ago, 10 months or a year ago, China announced that they intended to have something like 80% of the jobs in their number one manufacturing province in China, their number one industrial province, manufacturing province. They intended to replace 80% of the jobs with robots within a year or so. Where are all these workers going? I mean, this is China. They've already got more workers than they know what to do with, and they're going to displace some of these people with robots? Why would they do that? And the reason is because the robots are more competitive, and China is concerned about its capacity to remain competitive because its people are demanding higher wages. And so they're going to replace them with robots. But if I guarantee the point again, if they can replace people with workers with robots in China, I guarantee they can replace workers here in the United States because the Chinese are making a fraction of what they make here in the United States. There's a robot in your future, folks, and he may be taking your job. So, and what are we going to do? How can you resist the competition? I say, oh, we'll make a pledge. We're not going to hire any robots. We're going to make a pledge to the union that we will not be replacing any of your jobs with robots. Okay, make the pledge. Watch and see what happens. Those people who employ robots, and they will, some of them will, they're going to put you out of business. But who's going to have any money to buy the product? There is something that's just coming unwired. It's coming unglued. And I don't see that anyone is exactly addressing the problem in a way that reaches the public. I don't doubt some people are, a lot of people perhaps are contemplating this problem, but we are going to have a world where people really don't have jobs. That's where we're going. A lot of people don't have jobs. We're going to have a world where more and more people are unemployed. What are we going to do with that world? Can we structure the world? Can we live as people without jobs, without something to do? I suppose the answer is yes, but I don't know. It's going to take some big, monumental changes.
And with less people working means less revenue to the government, and less revenue to the government in order to support their big spending habits. And you know, I get the idea behind the tax cuts, but I'm listening to some of these reports where they're talking about, oh, with this opioid emergency executive order that was passed and so forth. Oh, well, you know, billions of dollars is going to be spent, tens and tens of billions of dollars. You know, these losses, these catastrophic losses to Puerto Rico, to Houston, to Florida, billions and billions and billions of dollars. I'm thinking of, isn't anybody adding up the number of times they say billions? Who in the heck is going to pay for all of these billions and billions of dollars that's just being spent?
I mean, what about war?
My good grief.
How many stupid little wars are we involved in? And did we go to war in Iraq? Did we go there for 8.5 years and 13 years in Afghanistan to make a political difference, an ideological difference? Or did we go to sell more bombs and bullets in order to keep the economy going? What are we really doing? Is the purpose of war to shoot people or to make more debt? We're going to take another break. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
You know, I just want to remind the listeners we're continuing with a special. It's been repriced to the drop in gold and silver from yesterday. Now they're both back up a little bit. So, again, it's a great buying opportunity. You save $10 from the beginning of the week, $545 for a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle and 20 American Silver Eagles dated 2017. Includes your shipping costs, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter that comes out Monday. It's going to be packed full of information. And don't forget the special, $545. I want to move on from this, Al, but I'm just looking at this report. 6,700 stores were in October, the end of October, they're anticipating over 8,000 stores to close this year.
This year?
This year, yeah. 67.
How many do they have already? They don't mean 8,000 more, do they? They mean 8,000
total, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, it's just like, that's
it's
a
evidence
lot.
Evidence of a Great Depression. It's evidence of a Great Depression to me. I mean, exaggerating this to some degree, but just the same, I don't think you can look at this and just dismiss the possibility that it's evidence of a Great Depression.
I mean, it's actually closer to 9,000, 8,600. And if that projection, we know that the 67, that is a done deal. But the projection for the end of the year, that means there's going to have, what, 2,000 more retailers, stores closed to the end of the year.
Not just to the end of the year, in the biggest retail section of the whole year.
Yeah.
This is people that are going to be closing their stores. If they're going to close first quarter next year, okay, maybe. If they're closing this year with Christmas and Thanksgiving coming up, this is the biggest retail opportunity of the year, and another 2,000 stores maybe closing? That's evidence that people in a position to operate these stores are not optimistic. A lot of Americans are optimistic because the Dow Jones is high and the Standard & Poor's is high and we're hitting record levels and ta-da, isn't this great? But there is a kind of illusion in the stock market, and there's a reality in the closing of another 2,000 stores in the next 2 months. That's 1,000 a month on average if the numbers we have are accurate, if the timing is accurate, and not 2,000 stores closing during the worst part of the retail season, the worst retail season for the year, during the best retail season of the year. I mean, that is, you can't look at that and sit back and say, oh, yeah, everything great. Everything's all under control. Nothing to see here, folks. Just keep moving. Keep on investing in the stock market. Buy some more stocks if you get a chance. Buy some more bonds. It's all going to work out just fine. I don't think so. And I say, I mean, this is evidence. You can't look at this and just dismiss it, write it off, and say, that's crazy talk. It might not be as bad as it seems to me. It may be that I'm exaggerating this. I'm not exaggerating I'm not intentionally exaggerating, but recognize the possibility that nevertheless, without intent, I may still be exaggerating the danger that's here. But it seems to me that this is absolutely a worthwhile consideration. You can't just say, oh, that doesn't count. Yeah, it does. I mean, it's significant. And it is one of these, if the numbers and the timing we're talking about are accurate, then it's cause for some serious concern. 2,000 more stores going to close down during the Christmas season? That is not a sign of economic optimism. And whatever the VIX is reading, however greedy people may be, the store closings say maybe it's time to be a little more fearful. Maybe it's time to be more concerned and say, uh-oh, better do something to protect ourselves.
You know, and you know, so it always makes you question. You have the U.S. economy unexpectedly maintained a brisk pace of growth, an increase in inventory investment, and a smaller trade deficit offset a hurricane-related slowdown in consumer spending and a decline in construction, where the gross domestic product increased a 3% annual rate in the July to September period after expending a 3.1% pace in the second quarter. So we'll just see how that gets adjusted here in the near future. But it's interesting that a smaller trade deficit offset the hurricane-related slowdown. So, and, you know, we've seen the fluctuations in our dollar. You know, that all has impact on how things are, you know, how it flows through the reports and the earnings and so forth. So, you know, again, it's all part of an illusion that, you know, I just don't believe things are as rosy and hopping as, you know, the 3% GDP reportedly shows. So,
well, I understand. I mean, you got to wonder, you know, we get lied to so often by government. It is difficult to trust anything they tell you. And I'm not saying you can't trust anything they tell you, but if you look at it, government tells me one thing. My first reaction is, I wonder what the truth is. If they're telling me something, are they telling me this because it's true or because they want me to react in a particular way like one of Pavlov's dogs? All right, we'll just flip the light on and the dogs will start to salivate. We don't even have to bring any food in. The dogs have been trained to salivate when the light goes on. Do they figure we've all been trained to salivate when they tell us that the economy is growing by 3%? Is that what's happening? But is it really growing by 3%? And is it 3% for everybody? All right. Yeah. You know, I saw, I think it was Ray Dalio. He made an observation in the last few days that there's really two sets of government. There's two sections of the economy right now. And he's pointing out that 40% of the people are doing okay in this country. And they really are doing a little better than they have been doing, and they have cause for optimism. But 60% are doing worse. And he's saying there's a divide here. You got to keep a look. We're talking about a majority of the population. Yeah, 40% is doing okay. Top 40% is doing okay. Bottom 60% is doing worse. 60%, a political majority. All right? This is the basis. This is consistent, in fact, with the idea that we're going to have another 2,000 stores closed down in the next couple of months. It's consistent with that idea. These people are in financial trouble. They can't afford to buy stuff. It means the stores are closing. If they can't afford to buy the stores, a lot of the stores can't keep open. And Dalio is pointing out this is not, we're not talking about 20% of the population is having a hard time. We're talking about 60% is having a hard time. The political majority. This implies that when the election of 2018 rolls around, a year from now, the populace is going to be open to radical ideas. Right? Just because they're desperate. If you can't find a way to feed these people and clothe them and house them in an adequate manner where they can get where they enjoy what's going on and they have hope and optimism, there are going to be politicians who will exploit this discomfort. And they're going to be promising them what? They're going to be promising them a rabbit or a chicken in every pot. All right? We've got something for you, something free, something whatever. And the people are going to vote for it because it may be the only hope they can see, even if it's an irrational hope. And we can't give free chickens to everybody. They're going to go for this. So we're sitting on the edge of what may be a serious, not just economic problem, but a serious political problem. Where the majority of people are, I mean, Trump may have just been the first speed bump in the systems, on the systems highway. What's going to happen in 2018? We know what happened in 2016. What's going to happen in 2018? Are people now going to be calm as, oh, things are okay because Donald Trump's in the White House? Or will they be more radical than they were in 2016? I think they're going to be more radical, and I think it's going to be a difficult time for another very challenging situation. 60% are having a hard time. What are you going to do about it?
And you know what? It's, you know, everybody looks at the football as far as their ratings are declining and so forth, you know, because of the kneeling, because of the national anthem. And you know what? Maybe it is a little bit bigger problem. I mean, certainly the football, it has been saturated. I mean, it used to be you had Monday night football, and then you have Sunday night. Now you have Thursday night and Monday night. And if they can throw, you know, it is, you know, enough's enough, you know, go back. However, you have Comcast. I mean, these sports stations, these sports channels, they're not cheap. And perhaps, and I've heard people saying, well, I don't pay it anymore. I dropped them because there was just too many of them. It was too expensive. So it can show in relation to that, you know, the ratings dropping and so forth could also be to people who are pulling back because they don't have the disposable income that they once had. They're not charging their recreation. Mm-hmm. As much as they did before, their entertainment as they did before. So, you know, and it does take time to filter through. And I think the next year the election's out might be interesting because it's going to be real interesting because the media is all focused on the White House. So how much attention are they going to be given to the various areas around the country for these campaigns? And so it might just turn out to be a lot of local campaigning and
yeah,
not
it'll
so
be
much.
A lot of local campaigning, but there's going to be, I think, if I had to guess right now, neither political party is going to be doing well in the next election.
No, I don't
it's
think
going
so.
To be a great opportunity for third parties to move
yeah,
ahead, new
be.
Parties to be created. It's going to be, there is, at the moment, I think the Democratic Party is in danger of splitting in half. One half is going to be pure communist, and the other half is going to be kind of middle of the road. Then we'll have the Republicans, and who knows what's going to happen over there. But the Democrats, Bernie Sanders made a lot
He's
of
strong.
Headway.
Yeah.
All right, and what's going to happen in 2018? Are circumstances going to be less hospitable to someone like Bernie Sanders or more hospitable?
More.
And I think they're going to be more.
More, I agree.
Yeah, I know. And the Democratic Party, they have made so many stupid mistakes. Behave like a bunch of thugs in some regards after the 2016 election, after Trump beat Hillary.
Yeah.
They have created, I think they have to have alienated a great deal of their base. There's going to be someone, Trump has started, he has gotten a ball moving in favor of populism. Where whether Trump is a populist or not, nevertheless, he kind of portrayed himself as one, and he has shown us that populism, that the right candidates with a populist campaign can win. Right? I think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see at least one of the political parties badly damaged in the 2018 election. And as unstable as things are, who knows which way it's going to go. But at the moment, it looks like the Democrats are in deep, deep trouble. I mean, some Democrats just have to be embarrassed and ashamed at some of the things their party has done over the last couple of years, during the last year. It's been astonishing. And what about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the money that's been exchanged apparently to give 20% of our uranium production to Russia? This is, I mean, that's just one thing. That's not everything. This is happening, and it happened on a Democrat during a Democratic Party administration. I think some Democrats have to be at least ashamed to the point where they're not going to vote. And some of them are going to be tempted by a new populist party coming in. And there may be. I think this is a great opportunity for a third political party. I think it's a tremendous opportunity for a third political party. Something like Ross Perot. All right. It will be, there'll be an opportunity for this. I don't know what'll happen, but there'll be an opportunity, and I think we'll see it in 2018, and I don't think that'll be the end of it. We'll see it again in 2020. All right. And as fast as the years move, that's not a long ways from now. You know? So we'll watch and see. Again, we definitely live in interesting times. And all of this points to a certain amount of instability, unpredictability. Who's got the gift of prophecy? Who's got the crystal ball? Who can tell us for sure what's going to happen? And the answer is probably no one, but nobody I know. But it all looks like it's going to be a bumpy ride. I cannot look down the road into 2018 and say, oh, oh, everything's going to be just, it's going to be rosy. The stock market's going to 30,000. Everything is going to work out just fine. Sooner or later, this thing's going to blow up in everybody's face. And when it does, you got to hope that you are not caught. And we tell you about this all the time. Be careful, be cautious of paper debt instruments. Most of them can't be paid. If you got any wealth, you better put it into something solid and tangible like gold or silver.
And they are coming after your 401ks. I don't care what anybody says. They need the money, and it's sitting there. And they will be after it. Yeah, I heard that, there's no way. Mr. Trump said there's no way that they would touch it, but they're going to.
They need it.
One way or another.
You can't trust them. I don't know what they're going to do, but you have to be wary. We're going to break now for a weekend. All right, we'll be back on Monday. Hope you tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
To be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.